if you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I want to give you an update. A couple of weeks ago, I guess it was sometime a week before last, I read a story about a Border Patrol agent that was given administrative leave because there was a shootout on the border in El Paso, Texas, and a 15-year-old kid ended up being shot. Of course, what they're saying on the Mexican side is, oh, the kids were just playing soccer. The Border Patrol agents came up and just started opening fire across the desolate, dry riverbed of the Rio Grande, which used to flow nice and neat, but now it's just a dry little creek bed for the most part. Well, this story comes out of the Associated Press. It says, a 15-year-old Mexican boy shot and killed by a U.S. Border Patrol agent was among El Paso's most wanted juvenile immigrant smugglers, according to federal arrest records reviewed by the Associated Press. The records show that Sergio Adrian Hernandez Jorica Guadalupe Gomez Sanchez, wait, why do they have so many names? Whatever it is, had been arrested at least four times since 2008 and twice in the same week in February 2009 on suspicion of smuggling illegal immigrants across the U.S.-Mexico border. Hernandez Ruiz Gonzalez Lopez was repeatedly arrested along the U.S. side of the border near downtown El Paso, not far from where he was killed, but was never charged with the crime by federal prosecutors. A Border Patrol agent shot and killed Hernandez June 7th while trying to arrest illegal immigrants crossing the muddy bed of the Rio Grande. Some witnesses said a group of people on the Mexican side were throwing rocks at the agents. Agents are generally permitted to use lethal force against rock throwers. So there you go. Can you that actually confuses me, actually. Somebody's throwing a rock at you, so you're allowed to kill them. I see a bit of a problem with that. I see that as a huge escalation of force. If someone's throwing rocks at you, it shouldn't take too much to get the hell out of the range. I mean, how far can a person actually throw a rock? And if somebody's throwing a rock at you from across the muddy bed of the Rio Grande, I mean, how far do you have to move before they can't hit you anymore? And if it's a far enough distance, all you have to do is you can see the rock coming, you step out of the way of the trajectory. I mean, but you can pull your gun and shoot them. I wonder how that would work with me. Evidently, you can use it for snowballs. We saw that in D.C. with a cop. But I wonder how that would work with for me. I'm not a government employee. I'm not a cop. I'm none of that. I'm not a Border Patrol agent. I wonder how that would work. I mean, is it one of these deals where if somebody starts throwing rocks at me, I can pull out my 1911 and shoot them in the chest because they're throwing rocks? Is there a different standard here with these federal agents? I wonder. I don't really know. But I do wonder. Who knows? Anyhow, that sums it up for this teen shot by the Border Patrol agent. We have plenty more stuff coming at you today. A little bit more interesting news coming at you from the border. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're listening to me right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back, everyone. Now, this comes from Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, and this comes from a hearing of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee on Monday, May 17th of 2010. All right. This, keep in mind that Janet Napolitano is the former governor of Arizona. She was governor when Obama came in and he tapped her to be Homeland Security Secretary. Part of the reason why is she's leftist, and the other part of the reason why is she should know something about Homeland Security having all of the problems with the Mexican border. Now, keep in mind, the single biggest threat to national security and the biggest threat to we as the citizens of this nation, without a doubt, unquestionably, is Washington, D.C. and the people who occupy it. Absolutely unquestionably. I mean, you want to talk about a really serious and imminent threat. You're talking about what happens in Washington, D.C. Coming second is the porous Mexican border. Essentially, if you're in Mexico, you could be anybody. You can get across into the States. You sneak across. You don't need to go through a toll booth. Okay? You don't need to go through some sort of check. So that's that being a very big problem. Now, the state of Arizona can't do very much about handling the serious and imminent threat out of Washington, D.C., but they can do something about their porous border. They've let the federal government handle security on the border, and I'm here to tell you that the security on the border in Arizona sucks because I've seen it firsthand. It is not good. It is porous as can be. When you see Border Patrol agents driving around patrolling some 40, 50, 60, 70 miles inland, that's when you realize there's a real problem. You need to secure it at the border. If remember the story about the little boy that there was a hole in the dike, so he stuck his finger in it to prevent the dike from flooding and breaking? He didn't stand 3 miles away and try to collect the water that was coming through. Would have been stupid. You have to control it at the border. So, again, Monday, May 17th, and this was at the height of everybody in D.C. getting so pissed off about the Arizona SB 1070 bill being passed, and none of them had read it. Still, even a month later, they had not read it. So, DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano, whose agency is charged with securing America's borders, told an audience in Washington, D.C. in reference to the U.S.-Mexico border, quote, "You're never going to totally seal that border," end quote. Napolitano spoke and answered questions at the Center for Strategic and International Studies on Securing the Border, a Smarter Law Enforcement Approach. Okay. When asked if she could give a timeline on when the border would be secured, Napolitano said, "The plain fact of the matter is that the border is as secure now as it has ever been, but we know we can always do more, and that will be the case. That will always be the case. It's a big border," she said. "It's 1,960 miles across that southwest border. It's some of the roughest, toughest geographical terrain in the world across that border," which is totally bogus. "And so the notion that you're going to seal that border somehow is something that anybody who's been involved in the actual doing of law enforcement, the front office work, or the front line work of that law enforcement would say, you're never going to totally seal that border." So she's now speaking on behalf of thousands of people. She doesn't speak on behalf of me, and I've been in law enforcement, and I've seen the border, I've been to the border. Some of the roughest terrain in the world? No, I don't think that it's rougher than, say, the Andes. I don't think it's rougher than, say, going up the Grand Canyon. I don't think it's rougher than, you know, even part of the Grand Staircase. I don't think it's rougher than, say, the Swiss Alps or the Himalayas, for that matter. I don't think it's as rough as the Sahara Desert. I don't think it's nearly as rough as the Alcan Highway, even. Anything in Siberia? I mean, come on, lady. Come on. Napolitano was also asked if she thought that Republicans withholding support for comprehensive immigration reform until the border secured was politically posturing. She said, "The notion that you're going to somehow seal the border and only at that point will you discuss immigration reform. That is not an answer to the problem, she said. Well, no, the answer to the problem is this. You can actually not have, I tell you what, you can put together a border. Doesn't cost you a dime. Doesn't cost you a dime. As a matter of fact, if you do this, it's an instant border erection. And you actually save money. In fact, you almost make money. And let me tell you what it is. You cut off all benefits to illegals. Everyone who's in this country illegally, they are allowed zero benefits out of the state or federal government, period. Absolutely not a dime. Let me tell you how expensive it is. The state of California has a $40 billion with a B. 40, comma, nine zeros behind it. Deficit. $40 billion. Did you know that this year, the deficit, the $40 billion deficit in California, is the same number of the welfare programs in the state, $40 billion. I'm not saying to cut them all off, not all of them. However, when the people who are in the state of California, who are in this country illegally from whatever country, soak up over $20 billion of those $40 billion, all California has to do to get halfway back into the black, out of the red, is to eliminate that. No more. Sorry, we're just not going to do it anymore. Why are people in this country illegally soaking up all of the tax money that comes from you and I? Why? Why are we allowing that? It's up to us to get to our state governments and say no more. Absolutely not. You will introduce and you will pass legislation. And you will honor that legislation that says anybody in this country who is here illegally will no longer at all get free benefits out of this country. It's just not going to happen. That is exactly what you're going to have to do. And that right there will secure the border, guys. We're not going to have people streaming across. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait. I'm going to sneak across there and get no benefits. I don't get any benefits here. They've passed laws now. That's a secondary thing. That are very strict about hiring people who are in this country illegally. Huh. Well, I can't get over there and get a job. I can't get over there and I can't get any kind of a free benefit. Why the hell do I need to go over to America? Well, I guess I'll just stay here. At least they speak Spanish here. That right there, guys, that's going to fix things. That's going to keep things in order. Lack of benefits and stronger laws against hiring people who are in this country illegally. Now, to allow people to come over legally and work without any benefits and without receiving any sort of citizenship automatically if they come over here and have a baby. Okay. If you're here in this country illegally and you have a baby, that baby should not be guaranteed any sort of citizenship if you're here illegally. If you're here legally, like as if you're already a citizen or you're a resident alien here legally and you have a kid, then perhaps we should look at if you're a resident alien. We could consider maybe citizenship then, but then only partial citizenship. If you're a citizen and you have a child, then that child is a citizen. That's just the way it goes. But to offer citizenship to anybody who's born on this land, you sneak across, you push out a kid 20 minutes later, now that kid's a citizen of the United States? No. No, that's wrong. That is not the way this is supposed to go down. This is not what we had in mind. Because now it makes it difficult. You can't kick a citizen out. And if a citizen needs to have their parent or guardian here, you can't just easily kick them out either. So, If you eliminate benefits, the benefit, handle the citizenship-related thing, you also end up handling the laws when it comes to governing people, being able to hire people who are here illegally and make them stricter, then you're going to have a much easier time securing the border because not so many people are going to be sneaking across. They'll have to go through a process to come across and get a job, and that's fine. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now, forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.BillCarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BillCarnes.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Well, Arizona, when Arizona signed its new immigration bill, SB 1070, on April 4th, the immediate response by several cities and states was to enact economic boycotts against the states with an aim of pressuring legislators to rethink that law. Well, I'm going to read a news article about just how that's going. With just about a month until the law takes effect, SB 1070 takes effect in Arizona on July 28th, maintaining those embargoes appears to have been tough going for most, especially in the wider economic downturn, and several have watered down their actions. The Los Angeles City Council last Wednesday granted itself an exemption to the city's boycott of Arizona to keep a red light photo enforcement program operating. That program generates about $3.6 million in annual ticket revenue for the city. The day before, now that the company that does that happens to operate in Phoenix. The day before that, Oakland voted to approve a $1 million contract with a multinational advertising company with corporate offices in Phoenix, Arizona. San Jose, which has several contracts with Arizona companies, cited potential economic harm in stopping short of a full boycott, voting instead for an official denunciation of SB 1070. Now, this is where the writer actually gets it wrong. The writer says the Arizona law allows police officers to question anyone they suspect of being an illegal immigrant and makes it a state crime to be in the country illegally. That's not true. First of all, the police have to have reasonable suspicion enough to stop you. Then, they have to have additional reasonable suspicion enough to believe that you might be in this country illegally before they can ask you anything at all about your immigration status. But yes, it does make it a state crime to be in the country illegally. So, what it looks like is Los Angeles, Oakland, San Jose, all of these cities that have imposed some form of economic boycott on the state of Arizona have decided, okay, well, we want to punish Arizona economically. But wait a minute, hold on. When we realize if we do that, we're going to hurt ourselves economically, now we're not going to do that. Oh, so it's a total one-way street. I see. Okay, we want to hurt them economically, but in the process, we're not going to take a bite out of that. So we're going to hurt them economically as long as it doesn't harm us. Okay, jackasses. Now, The comment, not so well, looks to be fairly accurate, says Jack Kaiser, director of the Los Angeles Economic Development Corporation, in describing how boycotts are progressing. From the beginning, Mr. Kaiser says an official boycott is much tougher than just getting the word out. It takes time and money for officials to go through rosters of supplies to analyze if another supplier costs more or not. Smaller cities and counties can do a boycott, but for a larger area and the state, it could be difficult and somewhat embarrassing, he says. The red light camera contract still has some time to go on it, he notes, even though Wednesday's city council action drew heated debate on operating costs, with some putting the higher than the with some putting them higher than the ticket revenue coming in. What they do is they have these red light cameras that sense motion, and if you bust through a light that is beyond yellow, approaching deep orange and hitting red, it takes a picture of you, the driver, and your plate, and sends you, runs it through the registration and sends you a ticket. Doesn't bother me much. I live in Nevada. I'll run every red light in California just to tick them off. Actually, I don't do that just because I don't go to L.A. much, but I will go through the speed traps in Arizona because my official address is my P.O. box, and the Nevada Department of Motor Vehicles doesn't have my actual physical address, so nobody can come actually serve me with a real-life citation, which is good for me. Now, Kaiser notes that Los Angeles Police Department planned to send officers to Arizona for a special terrorism training, quote, was canceled due to the boycott, end quote, but other actions have gone under the radar. Okay, so rather part of this whole reason for securing the border is also terrorists coming across. They have absolute, honest-to-God, real-life, documented, factual proof that many terrorists have snuck across the Mexican border into Arizona to get into and infiltrate into the rest of the United States. So the cops that want to train for anti-terrorist training, they said, we're not going to send you to Arizona because we don't like the law. Well, we wouldn't have to go to Arizona if they had secured the border long ago. Jackasses. That keeps coming to mind. Some cities have pulled back on their boycotts, claiming concerns that the actions hit only the business people and employees involved, often Hispanic, and not the legislators who create the law. Others have gone scrambling to praise legal definitions, such as the difference between corporate offices and corporate headquarters, to rationalize which companies are subject to the intent of the boycott. Well, I gotta tell you, these people are stupid. And I'm done with this story. I'm not even going to finish reading the damn thing. They're just dumb. California stupidity. That's all I have to say. Is California political stupidity is reigning true yet again. And some of these people are in office in D.C. Pelosi. Thank you. All right, guys, stay tuned. More to come after the break. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, this is moving on to actual terrorist related stuff. Jaw-dropping testimony in court by Fecal Shitzed, the would-be Times Square bomber, single-handedly undermines Obama administration efforts to ignore the dangers of Islam and jihad. Shitzed's forthright statement of purpose stands out because jihadists, when facing legal charges, typically save their own lily skin, yellow-bellied skin. by pleading not guilty or plea bargaining. Consider these few examples. Naveed Haque, who assaulted the Jewish Federation building in Seattle, pled not guilty by reason of insanity. Of course, he's a Muslim extremist. He's insane, at least by our standards. Lee Malvo, one of the Beltway snipers, explained that one reason for the shootings was that white people had tried to harm Louis Farrakhan. His partner, John Allen Mohammed, claimed his innocence all the way to the death chamber. Hassan Akbar killed two fellow American soldiers when they slept in a military compound. While they slept, right? Yeah, real ballsy. Then told the court, "I want to apologize for the attack that occurred. I felt that my life was in jeopardy and I had no other options. I also want to ask you for forgiveness for killing sleeping men." Mohammed Teraz Azari, whatever his name is, who tried to kill students at the University of North Carolina by running them over in a car and issued a series of jihadi rants against the United States, later experienced a change of heart, announcing himself very sorry for the crimes he'd committed and asked for release so that he can reestablish myself as a good, caring, and productive member of society in California. And of course, then we have Needle Hassan, who shot up everybody at Fort Hood. He wants forgiveness. Now, these efforts fit a broader pattern of Islamist mendacity. Rarely does a jihadi stand on principle, because they don't have any principle. They have no intestinal fortitude at all. Zarqiris Moussaoui, 9/11's would-be 20th hijacker, came close. His court proceedings began with his refusing to enter a plea, which, of course, then the presiding judge translated into not guilty. Any judge will do that. And then one fine day, pled guilty to all charges. Well, Shatad, 30, acted in an exceptional manner during his appearance in New York City Federal Court on June 21st. His answer to Judge Miriam Goldman Caesarbaum's many inquisitive questions, which is kind of interesting because you've got the Muslims who absolutely hate the Jews, and this judge, by name, Goldman Sasserbaum, is Jewish. So this is very interesting that the Muslim has to answer to her. Many inquisitive questions says, and where was the bomb? What did you do with the gun? Questions like that. Offered a dizzying mix of deference, and contempt. On the one hand, he politely, calmly, patiently, fully, and informatively answered about his actions. On the other hand, he in the same voice justified his attempt at cold-blooded mass murder. The judge asked Shitzad, after he announced an intent to plead guilty to all 10 counts of his indictment, "Why do you want to plead guilty?" A reasonable question given near certainty that guilty pleas will keep him in for long years in jail. He replied the following: "I want to plead guilty, and I'm going to plead guilty 100 times forward because until the hour the U.S. pulls its forces from Iraq and Afghanistan and stops the drone strikes in Somalia and Yemen and in Pakistan and stops the occupation of Muslim lands and stops killing the Muslims and stops reporting the Muslims to its government, we will be attacking the U.S., and I plead guilty to that." Well, you gotta honor that. Should we be over there in these Muslim countries doing things unequivocally? And my answer, no. Now, if they're a threat to the United States, we go over there, we smack them around. Okay? Afghanistan, I can see some justification to going in there. I don't know. The whole thing is just a mess. There's no reason we should be there right now. I'll tell you that much. Let that part of the world rule. I don't know that we really have to worry too much about the technology coming out of Afghanistan. When was the last time you saw anything that said made in Afghanistan? Have you seen that? I mean, the only industry I've ever even heard of was that came out of Afghanistan had to be, which was fake. It was in a movie, Super Troopers, where they had the cheap Afghani knockoff of Japanimation called Afghanistanimation. I've never seen anything said made in Afghanistan. You ever seen any electronic components made in Afghanistan? You ever even seen a blanket other than an Afghan And the Afghan was probably made in Taiwan. Was it really made in Afghanistan? No. I don't think we have to worry too much about the technology out of Afghanistan. The only technology they have is what the CIA gave to them to fight the Russians in the 80s. And then when the Russians left and they left some of their crap behind, they have some of that. Okay, so they have 25-year-old technology when it comes to rocket launchers and stuff. What's that going to do here in America? They're not going to reach here from Afghanistan. I still remember listening intently to the radio the days after 9/11, and somebody said, give me a plane, I'll fly it into the biggest building in Afghanistan. And the host said, you're going to try to fly a jumbo jet into a tent? Come on. Even a large tent at that. Again, we don't have to worry too much about Afghanistan. Now, their neighbor, Iran, yeah, maybe a little bit. They're trying to get nuclear weapons, and they're just going to launch that against Western interests. Well, that could be a threat. I think the biggest clear and present danger, again, is that out of the city of Washington, D.C. All of the rest of these come much further down the list. Continuing, Shinseid insisted on portraying himself as replying to American actions. He says, I am part of the answer to the U.S. terrorizing of the Muslim nations and the Muslim people. And on behalf of that, I'm avenging the attacks. Adding that, we Muslims are one community. Huh. Nor was that all. He flatly asserted that his goal has been to damage buildings and, quote, injure people or kill people because one has to understand where I'm coming from because I consider myself a mujahid, a Muslim soldier. Mujahid, I guess, is how you would pronounce that silly word. When Cederbaum, the judge, pointed out that pedestrians in Times Square during the early evening of May 1st, were not attacking Muslims, Shinseid replied, well, the American people selected the government. We consider them all the same. His comment reflects not just that American citizens are responsible for their democratically elected government, but also the Islamist view that, by definition, infidels cannot be innocents. Well, of course not. We're all guilty. We're all innocents. Yeah, no. We're all infidels. I think I want to make a t-shirt and a bumper sticker that says, proud American by birth, proud infidel by choice. However, let's see. This tirade does have the virtue of truthfulness. Shinseid's willingness to name his Islamic purposes and spend long years in jail for them flies in the face of Obama administration's efforts not to name Islam as the enemy, preferring such lame formulations as overseas contingency operations and man-caused disasters. Americans, as well as Westerners generally, all non-Muslims and anti-terrorist Muslims, should listen to the bold declaration by Fikil Shinseid and accept the painful fact that Islamist anger and aspirations truly do motivate their terrorist enemies. Ignoring this fact will not make it disappear. We are all in danger of these people. These people who see America as the big, bold, bad guy. And we can thank the scumbags in Washington, D.C. for putting that out. I mean, they represent us. And when they represent us poorly, what are you going to do? Right? You hire a publicist, and that publicist drags you down into the mud and tears you up. How are you going to repair that? Get another publicist? The damage has been done. You might be able to repair it a little bit with the new guy. You might even be able to overcome it after a bit, but people are still going to be remembering that, which will be what happens when we get all of these socialists out of office, hopefully never to be in again. We rally this election cycle, we rally the next election cycle. We get all these socialists out of office. We get our people back from the Middle East. We can do our best to try to repair things and say, look, here's the deal. We're going to get out of this mix. You guys stay there, we'll stay here. We'll do some business, all right? When that business is concluded, at the end of the day, we all, you know, we go home, you go to your tent, you know, we'll go back to the house, you go back to your cave, whatever it is, and that's all good. We'll come over there and buy some Afghans. Switching gears, I have spoken many times about different companies that would otherwise like to ban people from carrying legally possessed guns on their persons when they enter onto the property of these businesses. Now, if this business is a public conveyance, meaning it is open to the general public to come in there and do business, they don't have, their property rights do not supersede your inalienable rights to be able to carry this gun. Now, property rights come and go when you buy and sell property. Property rights do not supersede rights granted to you by your creator at birth. The government can't take them away, and somebody who owns a particular piece of property can't do that either. They can tell you, if it's not a public conveyance, look, this is my property, I'm in control of it, you can't be here. Like, I can do that in my house. I can make the rules in my house, my property. It's not a public conveyance. Dave Champion has an office. In Dave Champion's office, he can make the rules because it's not a public conveyance. He has private clients that come in. It is not a public conveyance. Walmart, Pizza Hut, Home Depot, Baskin Robbins, Ben and Jerry's, leftist anti-gun scumbags, they cannot tell you that you can't come in there with a gun. Costco. Different Costcos have a policy inside that individual store that says we don't want you to have a gun. It's not a corporate policy, and oftentimes they don't even have a sign. Even so, because they are a membership organization and the only qualification to be a member is to fill out a form and pay the dues, they qualify still as a public conveyance. They cannot keep you from having a gun. A friend of mine named Jeff, who is a Marine, former Marine, there's a particular Costco he goes to in Henderson, Nevada. And he consistently has had three different times he's had a run-in with the same assistant manager that has said, you can't have a gun. He says, not only can I have a gun, I do have a gun. As a matter of fact, I'm bringing my wife in with a gun next time as well. You cannot go against me on this. Well, according to the Arizona Daily Star, the company that owns most of Southern Arizona's Pizza Huts has reversed policy and is allowing customers to carry firearms into the restaurants if they are legal possessors. Patrick McKinney, vice president of operations for the Tucson-based Pizza Hut of Arizona, said he began reconsidering the company's policy of prohibiting guns after reading a newspaper article about the state's new concealed carry law. That law, which goes into effect July 29th, allows people 21 or older and not prohibited from having a firearm to carry a concealed gun without a permit. McKinney and his staff held a meeting about the issue and began to remove the restaurant signs banning firearms during the first week of June. He said in a writing reply, to questions, the issue of customers with firearms is confronting private business owners as Arizona's gun laws become more liberal and the gun rights advocates press for public acceptance of carried firearms. How about that? Thank you very much, Patrick McKinney of the Tucson-based Pizza Hut of Arizona. Now, I have to say, I've eaten in several of those restaurants, and I pack my gun anyhow. Whenever I've been in Arizona and I go to a Pizza Hut, I'm packing. And their sign's not going to tell me any different. They're a public conveyance. They can't do that. And I've had this argument with people. I have gone into a couple places of, oh, you please not. You know what? This is a public conveyance. It's not a membership only. And if it is a membership only, there is no right of refusal of the membership. All you need is the money to call it a membership, right? From there, you cannot tell me that I cannot come in here and share my political views. You cannot detain me unreasonably. You cannot search or seize me unreasonably. You cannot violate any other provision of my inalienable rights. One of my inalienable rights is to pack this gun, and you can't stop me, so get away. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
American dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property, until now. Announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
This out of Michigan, as reported by Amaland.com. Dear 2A supporters, just a short note to share our vision from our 4-2011. This is a note from the Second Amendment March founder, Skip Coriel. We are already busy planning and organizing the mother of all Second Amendment extravaganzas. I can't share details with you now, but trust me when I say you're going to love what we've got cooking here in the 2A kitchen. The Second Amendment movement has taken a real beating by the mainstream press for several decades, and they've weakened our public image. I say it's time to fight back. My biggest goal for 2011 is to improve the public image of gun owners by bringing an unprecedented number of new supporters into the shooting sports and 2A activism. We need more women and families in our ranks. All of our events for this year and next will be focusing around that goal. I was proud to help co-sponsor America's Victory Shoot, and I'd love to see as many of you there as possible. It's a real opportunity for some great training at a great price, and I hope to see all of you there with me at the range. All the best, Skip Coriel, founder, Second Amendment March. Of course, he's talking about America's Victory Shoot, which is the event that I put together. You heard the commercial at the end of the last break. This is going to be the largest patriotic shooting event in modern American history. We're going to have all kinds of awesome things going on that weekend, August 21st and 22nd of this year, just shy of 2 months away. Included with all of the awesome festivities and all of the really great vendors that are going to be there, all of the different sponsors that are going to be there, we're going to have 2 days of defensive handgun training intermixed with all of that. It's going to be an awesome time. 350 rounds. We're going to have 500 participants, and out of an entire nation of people, 500 participants might sound like a lot, but seats are filling up, guys. Go to victoryshoot.org to sign up, or you can go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the link to sign up. Your option. Go to victoryshoot.org. Check it out and sign up. This is something you're going to want to plan on, something you're going to want to be there for, because if you're not, all you're going to do is hear about it on the news. You're going to hear about how awesome it was and how you missed out. We don't want any of that, because, quite honestly, being there is going to rock. Not being there, it's going to kind of suck. It's going to be just outside of Chicago at Aurora Sportsman's Club, which is actually in Waterman, Illinois, just outside of Aurora. They used to be in Aurora, and then they secured a larger facility a few years back. So it's going to be there. Check us out at victoryshoot.org. Look at things. Sign up. We want to see you out there. We want to see a lot of RBN listeners, a lot of 2A fans out there at the range. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for The Control Factor, coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.
I will not break. I will show.